You're joined right now by a senior NBA writer for Bleacher Report. He is host of the Full 48 podcast. And if you do not know his reputation when it comes to Red Vines by now, that is on you. Howard Beck joins us. Good to have you back. Howard, how are you?
I'm great, Romy. How are you?
Super. Great to talk to you. So I mentioned Sean Livingston. Howard, let me start right there. I know he's somebody you think very highly of. I know you had him on your podcast earlier this season. In fact, what do you make of Sean as a player and as a person?
He's, you know, obviously, as you know, one of the stand-up guys of the NBA, a really thoughtful guy, smart player, smart person, you know, consummate teammate, and a guy who you can't not root for. I don't care. I know there's all this Warriors hate and backlash over the last few years, and, you know, people are tired of them. That's fine. I get that. But you can't be a fan of sports and of the NBA without feeling at least some good feelings about Sean Livingston because of what he came back from after, you know, snapping his leg and nearly losing it all those years ago. And for him to go from a guy who was projected as, you know, certainly a franchise star, a guy who people were likening to Magic Johnson when he first came in the league, to becoming just a phenomenal role player everywhere he's been, but in particular for this Warriors team. I mean, he's one of the best stories, feel-good stories of the NBA in the last decade.
I think that's very well said. I think he's one of the best feel-good stories of the NBA for the past decade. I'm going to call him, in all the years I've done this, one of the all-time good guys in any sport, any walk of life. He's something else. Now, they've won 8 straight, and they're on a tear right now. For all the talk about their chemistry earlier this season, how Kevin Durant fits into everything or anything, what do you make of what you see from Golden State right now and how they're playing?
Not entirely surprised. I mean, I think that, you know, unless you were an incredible pessimist or cynic, nobody could have written them off when they were struggling early. Whether that was about the usual just kind of early season doldrums or the chemistry issues, the flare-up between Draymond Green and Kevin Durant, whatever it was attributable to, you know, Curry being out for a bit, I never thought that it was somehow indicative of the Warriors' imminent demise or precipitous decline. I know some people felt that. I know some people felt like this is the moment. Like, we keep waiting for that moment, that maybe this is finally the moment where some combination of fatigue, boredom, tensions, whatever, cabin fever, something, that this was where it was all going to start to erode. And I thought, you know, that was possible. But to me, I still felt like at full strength, when they're healthy and everybody's in a good mood and want to win and want to demonstrate who they still can be, they will, and they have. And that blowout of the Nuggets was so telling, because you and I both know, Jim, this is what athletes do. You know, you say, statement game, it's a big one coming up. Is it? They all mean the same. It's all 1 of 82. BS. That was not 1 of 82. That was absolutely not just a shot across the bow. That was like a nuke across the bow, basically saying, you've had a nice season, Denver Nuggets. It's great that you're going to make the playoffs, and you've got some good things going there. Nikola Jokic is having an all-star season, but you're not the top team in the Western Conference. That was very clear. And they can that's the thing with this team. They can do that when they need to. They can summit that on cue. And they did. And I think that, you know, whatever we might see for the next couple months until the playoffs get here, and there will probably be some other periods where the Warriors kind of drag a little, and maybe DeMarcus Cousins will keep that from happening because it's given them some new life and energy in the rotation. But if they drag a little bit, I'm still going to say, you know what, the real Warriors will be there in April, May, and probably June.
Howard Beck is a senior NBA writer for Bleacher Report. He is the host of the Full 48 podcast. You know, really quickly, Howard, you mentioned DeMarcus Cousins. How have they played, in your eyes, in the 2 games with Cousins, and how do you see him fitting in the rest of the way?
Well, I mean, good early returns, but not surprising that, you know, the first game was like, you know, good numbers in short minutes because he fouled out, and the second game was not as good a numbers in shorter minutes. I mean, he's gonna be all over the map. You know, the Achilles injury is probably the toughest to come back from in the NBA. And to expect that he's going to be the old DeMarcus Cousins at an all-star level immediately or maybe even any time this season is probably unreasonable. What they need from him is simply to be a presence, to be a physical presence down low on offense as well as defense. To hit those open threes now and then because it keeps their spacing good. And to, I think just you know, he's also a really good playmaker, Jim. Like, that, this is one of the other aspects that gets overlooked. You can put him in the post and the same way that you do with Draymond Green and have him playmake from there, except the difference is if Draymond Green doesn't have an open passing lane, there's not much else he can do down in the post, but DeMarcus Cousins can still do some damage down there, Achilles or no. So I think he's given them a breath of fresh air. They needed some other variable to make this campaign, this attempted title run, feel different than the last few.
You know, it's a great point. And they look like they're having fun. I mean, they're smiling again. The energy is good. The spirit's good. Their body language looks good. Sean Livingston was talking about those things. Howard Beck is my guest. Now, Howard, changing up. A while back, you wrote a tremendous piece, I thought, about Carmelo Anthony and LeBron and the fact that they had a conversation going back to a hotel staircase when they were in high school. They both have had amazing careers. But what do you think Melo makes of the fact that he's just been traded to Chicago and the Bulls have no intention of playing him at all?
Yeah, and this comes obviously, you know, months after he was traded to Atlanta purely as a salary dump by Atlanta, where they traded Dennis Schroeder's contract to Oklahoma and they immediately waived Carmelo. So this is now going to be twice in, what, 6 months or something that Carmelo is dealt purely for the purposes of a cap transaction and payroll savings. And that goes for the Rockets, too, obviously. They traded him away instead of cutting him because they wanted to save luxury tax money. It's sad. I mean, I don't think that those are necessarily reflections on Carmelo, the person, or as a character. It's just a reflection on where he is in his career at age, what, 34, maybe going on 35. I mean, he's up there in years. He's, you know, was not particularly effective in Oklahoma last season, and he certainly wasn't effective for the Rockets, which is why they pulled the plug on that experiment. And look, no one's knocking down his door right now. If they were, they could have dealt him on his minimum contract anytime in the last couple of months. And it's been, I think it was November 9th is his last game or something. So, you know, you never know when the end is going to be for the All-Stars, for anybody. But in particular, the Stars, you know, one day they're still performing at a high level and averaging 25, and then one day it's just not there anymore. Is that the case for Carmelo? I mean, we'll see. The Bulls will eventually retrade him or waive him, and we'll, you know, probably after the trade deadline, February 7th, somebody else will then pick him up off the waiver wire, and we'll see what he still has to contribute. But Jim, the only thing I'm skeptical of is this. If Carmelo didn't want to play third wheel in Oklahoma, and he clearly did not, he said it, and he didn't figure out how to do it in Houston, where one of his best buddies, Chris Paul, was running point and playing next to an MVP, I just don't know if there's a better situation out there. He's not going to go anywhere where he's going to, you know, get 17 to 20 shots a game again. Like, those days are gone.
See, that's my thing, Howard. I think for the right fit, he can still score the ball. I just don't see the right fit. Now, is there any way at all? I mean, obviously, it would stand to reason he and LeBron are tight. Now, the Lakers, I think, are one of those teams that you mentioned that's not exactly knocking down the door. I mean, is that thing going to play out? Is it inevitable that he's going to end up here, or maybe not?
Well, I guess it depends on whether or not there's a more attractive option out there. And also, even for the Lakers, I think they've got to make room for him. And
right.
So that means dumping somebody. And is Carmelo better than your 15th man? Maybe. I mean, again, not intending to say that as an insult toward Carmelo. It's just he's not the same guy anymore. It happens to everybody. Also, like in today's NBA, Carmelo's really a four. And if you look at all the guys they have who can play the forward spots, obviously, you've got LeBron, you've got Kuzma, you've got Ingram. There's not exactly a gaping hole in the rotation in that area. What they really need is an upgrade at center and probably shooting guard. So I don't see where Carmelo really fits there other than he's LeBron's guy. Like, if LeBron weren't with the Lakers, we wouldn't even be talking about Carmelo going there.
Exactly right. Howard Beck joining us for a few more moments. Now, Howard, you and I have talked so many times over the years, but I think there's a pretty good chance I have never asked you about a team that I'm about to ask you about right now. And if I did, it was not in positive terms. I'm talking about the Brooklyn Nets. They've won four straight. They're two games over 500. Given what little GM Sean Marks and head coach Kenny Atkinson had to work with, how impressed are you with what they've done?
Jim, it's one of the most impressive, like under the radar impressive things that's been done. And it's going to be under the radar because they're not going to contend for a title anytime soon. They probably won't get anybody on the All-Star team, though D'Angelo Russell certainly merits consideration. But what they've done, if you remember when Sean Marks and Kenny Atkinson took over a few years ago, they were labeled the most hopeless team in the NBA. Not just the worst, most hopeless, because they were going to have no talent and no picks of their own to work with, so being lousy wasn't going to gain them anything in the draft. And yet here they are with Spencer Dinwiddie, who they picked up off the scrap heap and has played phenomenally. Joe Harris, they picked up off the scrap heap and has gotten new life in his NBA career. D'Angelo Russell had fallen out of favor in L.A., so again, a rehab project. And then they kept acquiring low picks by taking on other people's bad contracts. So then they got the picks that became Caris LeVert and Jared Allen, and then they, you know, these were low first rounders too, and that's a crapshoot in the NBA. But they aced those picks, and LeVert's barely even played this season. He was their best player when he went down, and you know he's been gone for 2 months. So they still can get better, not just because they have youth that's growing, but LeVert's going to come back at some point in the next couple of weeks, I think, and they'll be that much stronger. I mean, I think they're going to make the playoffs, and to have gone from most hopeless team in the NBA to back in the playoffs in such a short period of time, while the Orlando Magic are still trying to figure it out after being in the lottery year after year, and the Bulls are still trying to figure it out, the Knicks across the river are just an utter disaster. I mean, you look at the teams that have missed the playoffs for much longer periods than the Nets, and they're going to be back, and without ever having picked high in the lottery themselves.
It's a good story. All right, finally, your latest podcast features a conversation with Sharif Abdul-Rahim. He's the president of the G League. What was it like to catch up with him, and how much has the G League changed the way NBA teams handle their rosters?
Yeah, love Sharif. Great choice by the NBA to lead the G League, and at a critical moment here. He's coming in at a really interesting time because they are on their way to a 27th team in the next 12 to 18 months. They think they're going to be up to 30 teams, and it may change the, like, people might be like, ah, G League, what do I care? Like, I don't watch that. All right, that's fine. The key thing is this. Once you have 30 G League teams with direct affiliations with the 30 NBA franchises, suddenly you can now eliminate the age limit and have a true minor league development system so that if you pick a teenager, you pick a high school senior high in the draft, but he's not ready, but you had to draft him because you think this is the guy who 3 years from now is going to be the best in this class. Well, now you got something you can do with him. Now you can send him to your G League team that you have under your control, where you hired the coach and they run your stuff and they've got your medical staff and the kind of care you that your team prescribes. Now they can grow into the player that you hope they'll become under the NBA team's supervision. So that's the key thing. And that's the league that Sharif is inheriting as the new team, as the new league president, is a league that's on its way to becoming a true minor league system for the NBA and will pave the way for the age limit to go away and for true development to happen. And it'll make it a lot more exciting too. I mean, imagine it this way, where the top pick in the NBA draft, if we can eliminate the stigma, maybe that guy gets picked and goes straight to the G League on an NBA salary. And now you've got actual reason to want to watch those games. Just as you might if you were like a hardcore seam head in baseball and you like watching the guys rise through the minor league system and you see the stars of tomorrow, that's what the G League could be becoming in the next several years.
Talking all things NBA with a senior NBA writer for Bleacher Report. He is also the host of the Full 48 podcast. Howard Beck, my guest. Howard, great to get caught up. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Jim. Always great talking to you.
That's how you close the show. Howard, well done.